Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. I've been looking forward to this episode for quite some time. Today's guest is a star in the making who had an incredible run in 2023. He began the year in college and ended it with two professional wins, in addition to being a key component of the Team Europe side that triumphed in Rome. Let's get right to it. Here's my chat with Ludwig Aubert. Welcome, Ludwig Aubert, to The Smiley Show. And resume kind of speaks for itself here, Ludwig. I mean, winning on the DP World Tour, the PGA Tour, and then already playing in the Ryder Cup, really before even playing in a major championship. I know it's been a long year, and you know, I saw you at the RSM right after you had won, and I'd found out you were just about to drive from Texas all the way to your new home, which will be in Tallahassee, Florida. I want to know about that car drive. Yeah. Was it as long as it sounds like it was? What did you do?
Yeah, it was long. So we were kind of debating what to do, because obviously I had a bunch of stuff in Lubbock that I wanted to bring to Tallahassee, and I brought my girlfriend came with me as well, Olivia. And basically what we did, we just sat there and talked, honestly. Like, I feel like it's a pretty good grade, though, because we're still dating and we're still friends. So I think that was the main thing, that we didn't have any fallouts. And but yeah, we drove, like, I think the first 8 hours we were still in Texas, which in my eyes and my ears are like nuts. And then we stopped somewhere in Louisiana for the night, and then another 9 hours or something like that to get to Tallahassee.
It was 17 hours?
It was 17 hours, yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it. That means you probably listened to every Smiley Show episode then, the entire way. Is that true?
I finished Spotify.
So no podcasts, any music? I mean, we had Victor Hovland on, and he's like a big metalhead. We all weren't just...
Hopefully that's not
a Scandinavian thing.
I'd drive off the road if I listened to that. But no, we actually tried a few podcasts, kind of got sleepy and just did music and talking and a bunch of like phone calls and FaceTimes and kind of make the time run a little bit faster. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, we were going to try to squeeze this interview during that long car drive, and I was thinking in my head that, all right, he's driving from Lubbock to Tallahassee. I think that might be a little spotty on the old cell service on that drive. Mm-hmm. So we'll push
Texas isn't ideal for cell service.
And neither is Louisiana, where I went to school at LSU. And I tell you what, we have you joining this morning from England. It's 7 a.m. here in Birmingham. It's just after 1 o'clock over there in England. And but before we finish on that little topic in Tallahassee, I mean, Ludwig, you could live anywhere in the world and you pick Tallahassee. Why is that?
I felt like I've gotten that question quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. But no, I mean, for me, the most important thing whenever I was looking at places to live, obviously, I think ideally I would have loved to stay in Lubbock, Texas, but just for travel purposes, it's not the best. A bit inconvenient to go back and forth, especially now when the weather gets a little bit cooler. So so the most important thing for me was to kind of keep that social I guess, network that I had in college. And, you know, Vincent, one of my better friends, he called me up and asked me if I wanted to live with him. And I said, yes. It's, you know, it gives me someone to hang out with, not only on right. the golf course, but off the golf course. And we travel and stay together a lot at tournaments as well anyway. So, and I know his girlfriend quite well as well from junior golf. So, amazing. For me, it was a no brainer. I thought it was great. And the golf course is amazing. Florida State golf course. So it's, I think it'll turn out quite nicely.
Is he trying to turn you into a Seminole as well?
Funny enough, my first weekend was when they played the ACC game against Louisville, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It was, so I watched it. I was staying with some of his friends, and we watched it. It was hard to watch. It was a tough game.
Yeah, I was about to and say, that was not like the best game to watch.
And then obviously day after, news broke that they didn't make the playoffs, and everyone was pissed. And I don't know. I was trying to be indifferent.
They're going to start blaming you for moving into town for the Florida State Seminoles not making the playoff.
Sorry.
All righty. So let's talk about just you growing up in Sweden, because I read a fantastic article on The Independent just to kind of about charted your career a little bit, because I think I'm very familiar with your Texas Tech background and just what we've seen over the last year on the PGA Tour, DP World Tour. But growing up in Sweden, and I know the weather probably wasn't fantastic for a junior golfer growing up, but when did you really start getting into the game?
Yeah, yeah, that's a very fair statement. Say that the weather wasn't ideal. But no, I mean, my dad plays golf. He brought me to the course when I was young. I mean, I've seen pictures when I was very small, 3, 4, 5. Okay. But I never really liked it. I don't know why. I played football, or soccer was my main sport when I grew up, and that's what I wanted to do, and that's what I, you know, spend my hours doing up until I was maybe 12, 13. And then I think as I got older, I really enjoyed, you know, the summertime was great for golf. Football season was over. We played golf in the summertime, and we literally went to the course in the morning and then got picked up at night when it got dark. So that was basically how I spent my summers. And then the winter and spring and fall was other sports. So, and then obviously, you know, as I got older, I liked to compete a little bit more. And I think I played my first tournament when I was maybe 13 in golf. So some say that's quite late. I don't know.
Yeah. I was about to say it is, I mean, a little bit in this day and age. I mean, they got junior golfers playing at 6, 7, 8 years old over here.
I know. To me, that's nuts. But yeah, still. So yeah, I started playing. I mean, I quit football when I was starting high school. So when I was 16, I moved up to a city about 45 minutes away from my hometown, which is like a golf program academy thing. So that's where I met my swing coach, Hans. That's where anytime I come back home to Sweden, that's where I go to practice still.
Okay.
They have a pretty good, they have a really good indoor facility. The golf course is really nice where we played and practiced that. And I think that's when it really leveled up.
Right.
You know, I obviously learned a lot more about golf in general and knowledge and all those kind of things, and started competing on a little bit higher level. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. I guess it was a boarding school, and I still have the name of it. Phil. All right. Let me try to pronounce it and see how I do.
Yes.
It's Philborn Skolan.
Yeah. That wasn't terrible. Philborn Skolan.
Okay. Say it again.
Which is the school,
okay,
that, the high school
just off.
So they do a bunch of different sports as well. So I went to class with like football players and swimmers and basketball and handball, and like, so it was a pretty cool dynamic in school to go to, just from like an athlete's standpoint, I guess.
Okay. And before you got there, and you kind of mentioned playing football, and here in the States we obviously call it soccer.
Right.
How good were you at soccer? Was that a dream of yours? When did like golf become the, okay, I want to do this professionally, and this is what I'm going to go to the boarding school to try to achieve? Because I imagine at an early age over in Europe, it's like, if you're good enough in soccer, you probably have to commit to it at a pretty early age if you're going to play at the club level.
I was never like national team level. No. I played for a few like district games and camps and meetings, but it was never like, it wasn't anything serious like that. I just enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I can still play. And I play every now and then with my friends and stuff back home, but it wasn't like, oh, he's, you know, unbelievable. No.
Well, what position do you play? Cause you're a tall guy. I mean, I imagine you could have played.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were tall back then.
Yeah, so we were just saying that Steven Gerrard was my big guy growing up, and that's why how I got into Liverpool. So I basically wanted to be him. So I played central midfielder like he did, and just wanted to do everything that he did.
That's a lot of running at central midfield. That's a little bit too much
that's
for me.
I'm
much more. I'm much more of the forward role where you just throw it up there and I'll go get it.
Nice.
Well, man, that's a lot of fun. I mean, I grew up playing soccer or just different sports as well. I think it helps shape an athlete at an early age to be able to decide for themselves. And
yeah,
this school, it's a boarding school, correct? That you went to?
So yeah,
this was, I mean, to compare it to something in the States, I mean, this would be like going to an IMG Academy. It's a basically a prep school for college. Is that a good way of describing what the school is about, preparing young athletes?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, when you start high school, I think you're 15 in Sweden. Normally you do 3 years. So I just went to the school and it was 45 minutes away. We stayed in dorms, basically, similar to college, and took classes like normal, but we just had like more time for our specific sport. So we did golf, obviously, and other kids did other sports as well. But no, I think it would be similar to like an academy, something like that.
Yeah. And I was about to ask that. It's like, what would a full day look like? What time would y'all wake up to when you went to bed? I just want to know what a schedule was like.
Yeah. So
boarding school like this,
if I remember correctly, it was a couple of years ago. My memory's not great, but I think, so we woke up, we had practice 8 to 10, golf or gym 8 to 10. And then we would have class 10 to lunch and then class from like 2 to 3 or 1 to 3. And then we would have golf from like 3 to 6, something like that.
That's my type of school.
So it's honestly like the setup is very similar to college, to where you would like have workouts in the morning and then you go to class and then you come back to practice more. So for me, it was like perfect going into college because that whole setup and routines and whatnot, I've already done that for a couple of years. So, I really liked it.
And was it, so you kind of mentioned you met your swing coach during this time at school. And is this when, like during this time at school, is this when you really started to develop to where you started playing more amateur junior golf tournaments, whether it was around Europe? Did you ever play in the States at that age, or was it mainly
I did, yeah. So exactly like you said, I got better. I think I understood more about golf in general, like, you know, just golf knowledge, and obviously more about myself. And it was the first time where I really practiced, because I hadn't really practiced up until then. Like anytime I would go to the golf course, I'd go play because that's what I like to do. And then all of a sudden I got thrown into this academy where you're like, oh, practice a lot more. And it was good for me. It was really good for me because that kind of laid the foundation. I remember my first couple of winters, the off season was obviously a couple of months, and we did a lot of like technique stuff, my first couple of winters, and which I think looking back now was really good because it kind of laid a foundation. And then I think it must have been my second year when I was at that school where I got accepted into the national team, which is a different, I guess, organization. So the national team supports, you know, we go on trips when it's cold and we go on to play tournaments all over Europe. And we even went to like South Africa and Japan, and like we went all over the place. And then as you know, play better and play better, we got invited to these like AJGA events in America and came over. I played a few of those. I guess it kind of just got more and more and more. And then, got ready for college.
And is that where you were discovered? Were you discovered by Greg Sands at, in the States when you were playing an AJGA event, or did he actually see you over in Europe playing at something?
So he saw me play the British Boys.
Oh, wow.
In 2017, I think. So that, I remember that was the first time I saw him. We couldn't talk to each other because of all the NCAA rules and stuff. And I think that's when he started to recruit me, I guess. And at the time when I was recruited, we had a few Swedish guys on the team. We had a Norwegian assistant coach at the time. So I think all those things kind of went together. Yeah.
Anybody else recruited you?
Yeah, I was. So basically I got it down to either Texas Tech or Arizona State. Those were my two options. I really loved Arizona. I loved Tempe. I thought it was great. But at the end, I went with Tech, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. But I imagine, I don't know if you, I assume you probably took an official visit, but if you didn't, showing up from Sweden all the way in Lubbock, Texas, I can't imagine the... just the image of, oh, wow, I had a little different picture in my head of what this was going to look like. And I've never been to Lubbock, but I've just been told what West Texas is like. And it's a little different landscape than Sweden.
It's a little bit different. Oh, it was. My favorite joke about Lubbock is that you can watch your wife and kids run away for 3 days because it's so flat. That's my favorite one. But yeah, for me, coming from Sweden, obviously, it was very, very different. I remember we went in like early November or something like that. Obviously, it was cold in Sweden at the time. So I came there and I had shorts on. I thought it was the best thing ever. Even though, you know, it was, for me, it was great. Like, I loved it. But yeah, it was very different.
I imagine. And what about just going to a Texas Tech football game versus, I assume you probably went to some Liverpool football games. I mean, describe the difference in the atmospheres in a American football versus a European football.
It's very, I loved it. I mean, I love any kind of sport, live sport, especially where you can go watch and feel the atmosphere. And I remember we went to a game on my visit. And at the time I had no clue how football worked, or American football. I didn't know the rules and like, why are they stopping? What's with the timeouts? And, so I need to have that all explained to me, but it was really cool atmosphere. You can definitely, you know, feel the support from the school and all the students, and everyone is so involved, which I love. But it was just, I mean, it's a weird experience. And I bet for you, like LSU, it must've been unbelievable as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, it'd be similar to like, I grew up watching LSU since I was a little kid. So it'd be like, if Liverpool was a college football team, it'd be like you going to school with Liverpool. That's what the experience was like for me. You just, when you live and breathe a team growing up, then you get to go to school there, it's always a special experience.
That's cool. Yeah, that's really cool.
Well, just talk a little bit more about just your golf experience at Texas Tech. I mean, we talked about the development that you had at the junior level, and you get to Texas Tech and you won the Ben Hogan Award twice, which I think, is it John Rahm's the only other guy that's done that? Like, are y'all the two only guys that have done that? So you're already in great company there. What did you find out about yourself, or what did you learn about your golf game while you were in school that translated to the pro game? Was it something you learned from Greg Sands? Is it just your strategy? Just kind of walk me through that.
I think it was a little bit of mix of everything. For me, coming over to college obviously taught me a lot in terms of maturity. Obviously, I didn't have my mom tapping on my shoulder to do homework and go shower and do all these things. I had to do it, you know, yourself, which I think is great for everyone going to college. And, you know, it teaches you how to be responsible and take care of your training and practice and all these stuff. So I think from that, you know, I used to be so all over the place. Like, time management was awful. I would double book myself. I had to be at three places at the same time, and all these things, like, just kind of adds up together. So I had to, you know, I learned that in college, that I got, yeah, I mean, I was unbelievable at one point. So I got a lot better at that. And then in terms of the golf game, I think just being exposed to difficult courses, playing a tough schedule, experience different grass, like all these things, learn how to play different shots and playing against better players. I think just being in an environment where I remember my first couple of years, Sandy Scott was there at my school at Tech, and he was a top five player in the world at the time. And, you know, we hung out a lot and played together. And I think just being around really good players makes you a better player. And just asking things, you know, what do you do here? What do you do here? When everything shows up here. And then I think obviously Coach Sands has had a great influence on me in college. He kind of let me do what I wanted to do. He gave me the freedom to do that, and he trusted me. And I think that meant a lot to me, that I felt that trust from a very, you know, successful and respected coach. And, you know, I think he brought a little bit of the like mental piece to my game as well, where, you know, he saw what kind of player I was, but I don't think I saw myself. So he would, you know, help me speed up the process a little bit in terms of, dude, you can go win any tournament you want. And I think he helped me in terms of that, in terms of understanding and realization that, you know, you can actually go play and compete against a lot of good players.
Well, that's so interesting. So did he more so instill a belief in you that you could win?
I think so.
Is there something that was happening on the golf course earlier in your career at Texas Tech to where maybe it was like a mental mishap where you just would lose focus? Was there anything that he picked up on?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel like, because I mean, my freshman year was whenever COVID happened, but before COVID happened, I remember I played a few tournaments in the fall and I didn't play very well. I was kind of struggling, and, you know, we spoke about it, and I think we talked about just, it's okay to be a little bit uncomfortable at times. And obviously moving across the world to a new setting, a new school, culture, language, whatever, and just be okay with that. Like, it's going to take a little bit of time to get adjusted and get used to all these things. And then, yeah, he walked with me a lot, I think my sophomore and junior year. And, you know, I think just having that experience next to me, having that, in terms of decisions, in terms of, you know, in between shots, you would talk about anything else that is not golf related. And then, you know, once you get to the ball, you obviously talk about that. So I think it was just a lot of comfort. Obviously, you know, he is one of the most successful coaches that I've ever been around. So, it was a cool dynamic for sure.
I read that he suggested that your senior year, he wanted you to hit driver more often than not, and not to be too concerned about the accuracy because your distance was such a strength in your game.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we spoke about it, and you know, for me, because I am good with my driver, I think he picked up on that quicker than I did. And, you know, he would tell me, like, dude, just fucking hit it. And then, sure, if you hit 1 out of 10 in the water, that's fine, because the other 8 or 9 is going to be fine, that you're going to gain on that in the long term. So, you know, we obviously go through a game plan, and he would be okay with me hitting driver on most places where maybe other guys wouldn't do it, or et cetera. So I think that's something I'm still trying to do. That's something that I still like to do. And I think it's a good thing in today's golf as well to do.
Oh, 100%. Definitely gives you a statistical advantage over a lot of different players. But as we kind of talk about Texas Tech, and there's not many college players have had the experience that you've had just when discussing the new PGA Tour U program. I think that is such an added bonus for a college player to be able to look forward to something, to set goals of like, hey, I want to get this because this can get me onto the PGA Tour. Was that for you the ultimate goal? Was like, I want to be number one on the PGA Tour points list. I want to have my PGA Tour card. Or was it something that you just went and played and just let the results kind of come as they did?
No, definitely. I think they announced the PGA Tour rule, because that wasn't a thing.
No, yeah.
Up until my senior year, I think when they announced it was in the fall sometime.
In the fall of your senior year?
I think so. I think that's when they said, you know.
So you're like, let's go.
I'm like, whoa, come on. So when I saw that, obviously, you know, that's such a big nugget and such a big carrot that, you know, you can't deny it. And it has such a big impact on, you know, your rest of the after you get done playing for the school. So that's something that we definitely worked on. And I think, you know, we spoke about it so much during the spring, obviously. You know, I think I had a pretty big lead over the winter break or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I still had to, you know, go out and play really good golf because obviously the guys behind me were playing good as well. But I think we spoke about it so much that, you know, it was almost like it was clear in my head that I wanted to do it. And you know, I just needed to do what I did. And luckily I played a few tournaments and I played good. And then obviously towards the end of the season, it became clearer and clearer that I was going to win. And then, you know, I'll be forever grateful for the PGA Tour U program. It's done so much for me in my career, and it's going to keep doing that for guys coming behind me as well. And I think it's good for the game. I think it's going to make college golf better because all of a sudden there is this straight direct pathway to the PGA Tour through college. And it's going to make players come from everywhere across the world. You know, I think, for instance, England and then the UK guys, they don't really go to college that much because mm-hmm. they have so good amateur programs. But now it makes a lot more sense to go to college because first off, you play against the best players in the world on the amateur side, and then you can get your tour card, which is like, I'd do that.
Well, as somebody that's been through the program and definitely you've been able to take advantage of getting a PGA Tour card, is there anything you would adjust about the programs? Is there something that you're like, I don't think they have it quite right yet, or do you think that program's right where it should be?
You know, I think it's going to get better and better. Mm-hmm. And I think the more classes that graduate, they're going to learn stuff about, okay, how did it play out if we did this, and how did it play out if we do that? So I think, you know, at the moment, I think it's really good. Okay. Obviously, I'm super fortunate to kind of be the first guy to take advantage of it on that scale. But yeah, I don't really see a reason to try to change anything unless something really pops up that is obvious. But I think a lot of guys will keep benefiting from it and obviously make pro golf better at the end of the day, too.
Well, I just thought that, you know, some of these guys come up, they're freshman, sophomore years in college and get it going quick. And that accelerated program is definitely, I'm glad they have that because Gordon Sargent, he's kind of the next one in line, got his PGA Tour card. So,
he'll be done in the summer, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think he could go back to Vanderbilt for another year if he wants, or he'll be playing on the PGA Tour with you guys. But I actually kind of want to watch you two hit drivers just like next to each other.
Oh, he hits it so much further than me there, though. Hits it further. Oh, by far, yeah. So we played, it seemed like my last year in college, we played like every tournament together. We were paired together.
I guess that makes
sense.
And
I vividly remember at the U.S. Amateur in New Jersey, we played together in the stroke play event.
At Ridgewood, while I was there.
It was the other course, actually.
I didn't go to the other course.
Shit. So 9 is a par 5. Yeah. And I like heel cut a drive. It's still in the middle of the fairway. And I remember I took out my laser and I lasered 60 yards to Gordon in front of me. And I go, dude, come on, man. I like half shanked a 4-iron green side and he like 9-iron green 2-putt birdie. I go, good shot.
Oh, man, I hope you two are going to be competing against each other for a long time.
I hope so, too. Gordon's
a very good friend of mine. I watched him grow up at the same golf course here in Birmingham. So
I'd
love to watch you two continue to compete against each other. And we kind of just mentioned turning pro, and that's something that you eventually did, as we know. But when you came out of Texas Tech, you have a PGA Tour card. What were the expectations for the rest of the year? Was it just live out of a suitcase and just try to play as good as golf as you could? Is that all you can do, right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I remember we said just be okay with play a lot and be okay with being a little bit tired at times, because at the end of the day, what I wanted to do was just improve my status and improve my rankings and, you know, climb on the world ranking points and the FedEx. And by doing that, I just needed to play. And you know, I felt like I could definitely feel like the expectations from others and from media. And because, I mean, being the first guy to take advantage of it, like, you don't want to screw up. Like, I feel like I was kind of representing college golf a little bit. And if I play poorly, like, they're going to be, is this guy really worth it? You know? So for me coming out, I was like, gosh, yeah, I need to kind of play well. I mean, I didn't think about it, you know, during the tournaments, but it was definitely something that is in the back of my head. But I was so, you know, fortunate and happy to play all these events that I've watched for a long time and spend time with some really good players and watch them play and compete. And obviously the traveling piece was a big deal that, you know, I hadn't really played that much back-to-back-to-back-to-back weeks and all the learning curves that comes with that. And I feel like I learned a lot over this past summer and it's, yeah, I mean, it's just been really cool.
I mean, was your body the biggest thing, just like physically? No, just playing?
No, it was my head.
Really?
It was my head. Yeah.
Just like every day you're just like, man, just exhausted.
I
mean, or just,
I slept like a baby for like 3 months straight. So tired at night. but no, I mean, I think I've gotten a lot better at it, but I used to be like golf, golf, golf all the time, all the time, all the time, even when I wasn't playing. So I had a really hard time like switching off, which is difficult when you play that much golf. Because already there is a lot of golf on the table. And then I got better at like switching off, doing other things. And but yeah, I think after my first... I did like a 5 week stretch, my first, like when I started. And I think after that, I was just knackered. And then I had 2 weeks off or something like that. And it got a little bit better. And I feel like every stretch that I do, it's getting a little bit better.
Right.
But yeah, I felt like physically it held up quite nicely. But I think, yeah, mentally it was a little bit difficult.
Well, I read as well that Eduardo Molinari, like while you were still at Texas Tech, he called Luke Donald and said, dude, this guy, like, it could be a really nice asset for you. I'm not telling you to pick him now, but what I am telling you to do is to look out for this guy. Was there ever a point that you ever heard from the European Ryder Cup camp, like, hey, we're keeping an eye on you, or anything early on while you had turned pro?
Yeah, I think I played with Dodo Eduardo in Dubai in January when I was in college.
Yeah,
because I got an invite through the PGA Tour U program to the Desert Classic. So I came after my Christmas break. I went straight to Dubai and played the tournament. Okay. And I think first two rounds we were paired together. I didn't think much of it. Yeah, I did. At the time. I just, you know, for me, it was cool to play a tour event. Obviously, Dubai was really awesome. And I mean, for me, the Ryder Cup wasn't like, come on, that's not where I am.
You're still
I'm in college
at this point. Yeah, you're playing with Eduardo. So did you hear anything else?
No, I didn't hear anything up until we played in Detroit together. So I paired with Luke in Detroit that first two rounds. And that's when I kind of realized, like, okay, maybe he wants to keep an eye on me a little bit. But I felt like those 2 days were nice. It was good because we kind of got to know each other a little bit better. That was the first time I met him. And we spoke about everything and anything. And for me, that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, I didn't quite hear anything for a couple of weeks. And then I went over and played a few events in Europe.
And that's like where it kind of started to really switch for you, because I'm sitting here looking at all the weeks you played, and you played well on the PGA Tour during the summer, but I imagine it was hot and you're playing a ton of golf. But it looks like you had 2 weeks off before you played the Czech Masters. And I imagine that reset was probably the reset you needed to get that energy to go T4th and then winning at the European Masters.
Yeah, definitely. I remember after Wyndham, I felt like I played decent, but didn't score very well. And then I thought I was going to have like 5 weeks off until Napa. And then,
so when did you make the decision to go play in Europe? Was that just a push towards the Ryder Cup, or was that just
basically
a push towards...
Because I remember I spoke with Luke and he was like, I'd love for you to go over, play a few more events. And I go, yeah, captain.
How high do you want me to jump? Okay.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Sure. Where should I go? So yeah, I went over, played in Prague, and then played in Switzerland the week after. And then I win. Yeah. So
yeah,
I kind of felt like whenever I came over to Europe that, okay, I need to play well in these two events to even be remotely close to being considered. And then, yeah, obviously I think after Sunday and Kron, he called me on FaceTime and I was like, whoa.
So, but when you tapped in though, when you won the golf tournament, did you feel like that was enough in your head? Do you think it's like, I think I just made the Ryder Cup team? Were you still on the fence?
I remember.
It was a lot of players kind of fighting for a couple spots.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I remember, I think Bob played pretty good that week too, to kind of get an automatic spot. And I played with Nikolai as well. And we were all kind of like on the bubble, I guess. And I felt like for me to get a realistic chance, I needed to win a tournament. Like, I felt like just to be picked, not winning a golf tournament, it didn't feel good for me. It felt like a little bit adjustable. So, I felt like it felt really good for, obviously, to get your first professional win is unbelievable, but to do it when I felt like I needed to, that was probably more satisfying, if anything.
So when Luke Donald FaceTimed you, I can't imagine he was asking about what the Texas Tech football team, what they were going to look like next fall. But I mean, what did he say on the phone? Was it just like, hey, you're on the team? Like, was it simple as that? Or?
Basically, I think he called me. I don't exactly remember the conversation, but I think he congratulated me to the win. Yeah, I mean, it was a blur. I was cloud nine, high on something. And then he called me, congratulated me on the win, and then, yeah, basically said that I was on the team.
Dude, that is so cool. And yeah, I know the BMW week, y'all all played together, but before that, you did a scouting trip. I mean, so you show up there. Now, that had to be really cool to be a part of the scouting trip and just the to making friendships with some of the best players in the world and creating a bond with them, getting to pick their brains, letting them tell you about the Ryder Cup. You get to see it in Rome, just playing the golf course and trying to picture what it's going to look like. I mean, that had to be just the most surreal couple weeks for you coming. I mean, just not too long ago, we were in Lubbock, Texas, and now we're playing practice rounds with Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, and Victor Hovland, all these guys that are, you know, that been some of the best players in the world. I mean, what was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was nuts. I do remember that trip we did, the Monday of Wentworth. That was really cool because that was kind of like one of the first times that I met everyone. And we had dinner and we just chatted and we played together as well. I got to play with Victor, Rory, and Tommy, and for me that was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. And then I just kind of played Wentworth together. I played with Rory and Victor first two rounds, and then
you played well.
I played well, which was, that was kind of like the first time that I really experienced like a lot of people, major golf course, playing with those two guys. So I think I took a lot with me from that week as well. Even though I didn't, you know, finish the tournament off on Sunday, I still felt like, you know, that was pretty cool.
Right.
And then
it's an experience, right?
Yeah. And that's kind of what we said as well. Like this past summer and these past 6 months, there's been so many first things for me, like so many new experiences, and okay, everything I'm doing is basically I'm doing it for the first time. And yes, you might not succeed the first time, but, and that's okay. You just got to learn from it and be okay with this little, almost when I started college, like it's okay to be a little bit uncomfortable first couple of times, and it'll take time basically. And just being okay with that and not, you know, beating myself up too hard if things aren't going my way, and then, yeah, I think we had 1 week in between Wentworth and Rome, where I stayed in England and then, came to Rome.
Well, we had Jordan Spieth on the show earlier this year, and it was one of my favorite interviews. And as you know, Jordan's a very great communicator, but he sometimes says things that you're like, oh, wow, that's what cued in your big year. And we have some sound from him that we're going to play for you talking about his Ryder Cup experience and what that felt like and how that translated to him for major championships moving forward. So we're going to play that sound right now.
It happened to me in 2014, as far as just having success in the Ryder Cup and doing it on foreign soil. It felt like I had contended at the Masters and the Players in 2014, and I came up short. And then after the Ryder Cup, I felt like I found that little extra gear to be able to close stuff out.
Interesting.
And those felt like the back nine of winning a major every single match. And so when you won them, it was like, all right, I didn't do anything different. You know, I just did this a little bit better. And it led to, I think it was a massive step in the direction that led to my 2015 season. So it's that, you know, just keep putting yourself on those teams, and it does a lot individually for you the next year too.
So we just listened to that. I mean, Ludvig, just responding to that. I mean, we know that you have not played a major championship yet, but do you think your experiences at the Ryder Cup, you already know what that's going to feel like? You kind of mentioned BMWs, playing with Rory, seeing those big crowds. Is that kind of the expectation and those emotions? Is that what you expect to feel at those majors?
I think so. I mean, just like Jordan said, I mean, a Ryder Cup is so different from any, you know, sporting golf event that you can think of. It's almost like golf on steroids. And then everything kind of becomes easier after that. I think for me, playing the Ryder Cup with everything that comes with it definitely helped me, because I vividly remember. So I played Rome, and then the week after goes to Mississippi and Jackson. And we're like, whoa, this is quite easy if you compare to last week. I'm not saying it was easy, but it felt easier, at least, to, you know, cope with the crowds and people and fans. And it was just a new experience for me. And I think I learned a lot from it. I think just putting yourself, like Jordan said, in that environment. And, you know, me and Victor, we won a couple of matches, and I think that was pretty cool. And it kind of validated that, you know, I can do it. I'm able to do that against one of the best players in the world. So I think I took a lot with that from me. And hopefully I'll be able to do that over next year and kind of use those experiences to my advantage.
And you talked about you and Victor won some matches at the Ryder Cup, and yes, you did. And I got to watch both of them. I was walking the fairways with you guys on Friday and Saturday morning in the foursomes. And first off, I want to get a quick quote from you walking off the first green. That had to be the wildest 10 minutes you've ever experienced in your life. You went from hitting your first shot in the Ryder Cup in the fairway, which you hit it out to a right. You kind of put him in a weird little spot.
Yeah.
I mean, when he pulled the wedge out and he chipped that in, what is going through your mind?
Well, yes. Obviously he hit the fairway like he always does. And then I kind of like semi shanked one to the right, and I knew there was a ridge, and I just, please be sure of that ridge so he doesn't have to go over that little hump. And then we got up there and it's all the way on the fringe, and obviously I trust him with everything that I have. Like, he's one of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm not ever going to question whatever he does. So he pulls a wedge and I go, yeah, good choice. And then obviously I was like standing behind the green, and as he chips it, it just checks up perfectly. And you could tell from 10 feet that was going to go in. But yeah, that kind of, I think that first hole was like, okay, this is, you know, pretty cool. This is very different. And I guess that's what the Ryder Cup is about.
Well, I can't imagine being in your shoes in that moment, but I want to put you in my shoes. So I'm behind the green trying to call this shot. Yeah. And if you were me, how would you have called that shot? Would you have said it's a putt, it's a chip? What would you have said?
I think he could hit a putt and get it to maybe 5 feet. I don't think he would have been able to make it with a putt. But yeah, I mean, obviously Victor is, you know, high on confidence and just won the FedEx Cup, and, you know, he's pretty good at golf. So I think, you know, he can do whatever he wants with a golf ball and a club. But yeah, I understand the dilemma in your shoes. Definitely.
You can imagine what did you say? It was not great. It wasn't good at all. I mean, I'll tell you this. It wasn't, I looked behind it and I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Sometimes on the first hole of a golf tournament, it's hard because I didn't get to putt, you know, before the round. Yeah. I didn't putt in the practice rounds. I don't know how fast the greens are specifically, but I could tell like he could get it somewhat close on the putt. Mm-hmm. And I walked to the back of the green, and next thing you know, like they're coming down to me, and it's like, and I believe we have the sound if
that's why
if you want to hear it, because it's a bit of a tough scene at the end because I'm trying to explain it all.
All right, back out to the first. We say hello to Smiley Kaufman.
Good morning, Terry. Victor Hovland with a wedge. A little surprised he doesn't have the putter out. Very fast downhill after he's going to get over this little slope.
So good. Pull back to this green. Boom. Look at that. That's why he used the wedge.
So you can kind of hear me mumble my way through. It's like, oh, he's got a wedge out. A little surprised by this, and he's going to be. Yeah. And like after that, I was like, what is he trying to do? Is he bumping it into the hill? And but he makes it. I just remember because it's uphill walk to that second tee box, and I'm just sitting here like the crowd is going absolutely nuts, and I'm just thinking to myself, what just happened? Like if I have another moment like that, I'm not going to survive a Ryder Cup. My producer is going to be like. Get a call right. But I really think nobody else would have ever chipped that. So I'm glad you agree with me.
Yeah, no, I could see both. But yeah, a little bit surprised he pulled the wedge, but obviously turned out pretty good.
If I could just interject one more time, because Ludwig, I'd also love to show you Victor's reaction to that clip on our show as well.
Suck it, Smiley.
That was his reaction to me telling him he couldn't chip, but here I wasn't in that moment. Just add a little context there.
That's too good. That's too good.
And you two, like, it was funny because I was walking past you guys on the 12th hole on Friday, and you two were speaking not English, and it threw me off so bad because I've only spoken English to Victor and I had not really met you yet, so I didn't even put together that y'all were speaking. I imagine y'all's languages are fairly similar, same language. What's going on there?
Yeah, so obviously he speaks Norwegian, I speak Swedish, but they're very similar. They're kind of like brothers and sisters. He, you know, I understand Norwegian very, very well. Danish is a lot harder. I can read Danish, but I can't really speak Danish. But Norwegian is easy to understand. Yeah.
Well, that definitely had to help you guys on your partnership. And, we have a little sound to play. Victor, when asking about you here at the Ryder Cup, he had some kind words to say and just how stoic you were.
I'm sure he was nervous. But that's a cool thing with him is that he did not show it at all. He's like Henrik Stenson. He's the new Iceman. He was so calm. When you couple his driving long and straight, and then he starts making putts, it's so much fun to watch. And I was just happy that I just tried to put the ball in the green, and it was, you know, my work here is done.
He did that. He did that very well, I think.
He does that a lot of times. When he said that, it was like, I was just trying to put in the fairway. I was like, Victor, you do that every time. Shut up.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him miss a fairway. So, well, that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, no, I'm so obviously we're going to be calling you the Iceman as we move forward because because Victor called you that. So that's
okay. I'm okay with that.
And real quick, as we move past the Ryder Cup. On the 11th green, when you win 9-7 against Brooks Koepka and Scottie Scheffler, I mean, these are two of the probably arguably the best American players that we've seen over the last couple of years. And what do you like when you shake their hand on that green? Do you say like enjoyed it? what do you say? Like it's like,
dude, I don't even know.
Seriously, I don't think I wouldn't know what to say.
Me neither. I just remember like last couple of, like we were walking down like 9 and 10 and me and Victor like looking at each other like, what is going on? Like we're like 9 up. I mean I was obviously expecting a tough match.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean obviously Brooks and Scotty maybe didn't have their best day, which, you know, is what it is. And foursome is a weird format sometimes where one of them can get thrown off a little bit, and it's a weird dynamic.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's weird. I think I just said thanks and obviously went over to my parents and Victor and all those guys.
Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for the long lunch.
Cause I was trying to keep track that day of, like what each team would be relative to par, just so I kind of knew who was playing better. And then I started tracking y'all's stats on the 10th hole. I'm thinking like, okay, did they hit the fairway here? Did they hit the green here? I had y'all hitting virtually every fairway and every green to the 11th hole, except the ones that y'all were trying to drive. And nobody was beating y'all that day because it was machine. Yeah. Like you would put it in the fairway, he'd hit it on the green, and you'd make a putt. Y'all had some conceded holes here and there, but you could have been 7-under through 11 is what I had you at.
Yeah, I remember us playing very well, and we kind of took advantage of the opportunities that we got. And like you said, foursome could be a little bit weird at times, but obviously, you know, Victor hits it straight. I hit some fairways here and there, and then a few putts rolled in. So it was, it was really cool and something that I'll definitely never forget.
Well, I bet so. I know you want to be back there in 2025, Bethpage, but as we move on to 2024, you had a recently fairly big change, adding Joe Scobbin to the bag. How excited are you to have Joe on the bag? He's a friend of mine. I think he's very good at what he does, but what went into that decision to bring Joe on?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, because of, you know, the last 6 months has been unbelievable. It's been so much fun, and Jack has done an amazing job. I was very, you know, clear to tell him that. And I was, you know, very clear to say that what you've done has helped me so much. But I think for next year, all I'm looking for is more experience in these bigger tournaments. I wanted someone that I can rely on 1,000%. And I think with, you know, the experience in the past that Joe has, kind of speaks for itself. And I think that's mainly what I'm looking for. You know, playing a US Open where you win at 6-under, it's difficult to get away with mistakes. That's what I felt like that went into that decision. And, you know, I feel good about it. And, you know, I was very clear saying to Jack that it's nothing personal. It's you know, it's a business decision. And you know, I'm always going to be a big fan of Jack. So obviously no strings or no hard feelings or anything like that from my side. Right. It's been really cool.
Oh, it's never easy. You know, I've been 24 and 25 years old, and having to let go of somebody much older than you, it's never easy. And
the thing is, there's not a good way to do it. There's always going to be some emotions and some, you know, opinions here and there, but I feel good about it, and you know, I trust my instincts.
Well, great. And that's the most important thing. You're looking out for what's to come in 2024, and that's playing major championship golf. And what are you most looking forward to about playing in majors? Is there one major in particular, or is it just playing them all, just to see what each experience is going to be like?
I think the Masters is the one that sticks out to me. You know, obviously Augusta's, we were there my freshman year in college and played and hung out. And ever since that day, I've just been in love with it. Like, it's so cool. Such a special place and to play that tournament. Obviously, so I'm not a big golf watcher. I don't watch that much golf, never been. Mm-hmm. But the Masters, I've always watched it. Just because it's so cool. And obviously, I think for next year, being a part of it, it's going to be unbelievable.
I mean, Ludwig, you can be a little more honest with me. If you don't like listening to me on TV, you can just tell it to my face. You know, like if you don't like watching golf and listen to me blabber away about you hitting 7 irons right at the pin all day, I mean, I'll just start, you know, mixing it up a little bit, try to mix my delivery up.
Has nothing to do with you, Smiley.
I know you're a busy man, and being in Tallahassee now, are you going to try to make a little scouting trip over to Augusta before
April?
It's not that far away.
So. No, it's only a couple hours, three maybe. I think we're going to have a weekend or something like that planned up in the spring to go and see the place and hang out and something like that. I haven't been there in 4 years, so that'll be I don't think much has changed. Maybe a few tee boxes here and there, but it'll be just be nice to kind of prepare a little bit more and then obviously be ready for April.
Right. And in major championships, we just talked about them, but is there any goals with those? Are you a big goal guy? Like, do you say, I want to win a major next year? Is that something that like in your mind you're already thinking about, or are you just a prepare every day kind of guy and just,
I see what you mean. I think goals are very important. I think it's very, you know, it's necessary to have goals because, you know, it puts you in line with what you want, and it's very easy to make decisions based on that if you know where you want to go. But I also think it's difficult to say, hey, I want to win this specific tournament, because I think there's a lot that goes into winning a tournament. I mean, you have to have a lot of things go your way. I like to have a long-term and a short-term goal. So a short-term goal would more be like, hey, I want to be – so like in the spring or in the fall, for example, I want to be top 50 before New Year's in the world. I feel like that's more in my control, what I can do. And obviously playing well would get me there. And then, yeah, winning a tournament obviously helps. But ultimately, you want to win tournaments. But I feel like if you only focus on winning tournaments, it's easy to forget the little things that you can control. Whereas winning an actual tournament, sure, you control it, but not to that extent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I imagine that short-term, long-term goals helps keep the picture a little bit more clear as you head into another busy 2024, where I'm sure you're going to be living out of a suitcase, traveling in and out of Tallahassee. But before we send you off, we have got to ask you, you're in England now, you're heading to Sweden next week. It's the holiday seasons. What is the Aubert Christmas tradition versus, you know, I know what we do over here in Birmingham, Alabama is probably a little bit different than what you experience over in Sweden. What is that Christmas day going to look like for you?
I think a little bit different. Well, first off, we don't celebrate Christmas on the 25th. We do the 24th. Right. So that may be a bit of a change. So the 24th, I don't know. This is weird. It's not weird for us, but it's a tradition that at 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve, there's not a single household in Sweden that is not watching the TV. And there's like a cartoon sketch for an hour with Donald Duck that everyone watches. It's really funny. Yeah.
Is there a live stream on this? I might have to like tune in to see what probably this is.
So I think it started because my mom would watch it when she was little. And that would be like the only hour a year where they could watch cartoons. So that kind of stuck. And so like the whole family gathers around the TV, watches Donald Duck for an hour at 3 o'clock. And then, yeah, we would go out. We'd obviously eat a lot of food. And then,
what are you eating? What's the food? What's like a traditional?
So in Sweden, a lot of potato, meatballs, sausages, ham, fish, like this pickled herring fish things. I hate it. It's disgusting, but a lot of people eat that. I'm by the kids' table. I eat whatever the kids are eating. So
I keep it very easy. Chicken nuggets all day, man. But Charlie,
yeah, chicken nuggets.
You were butting in. Like you got to get this your little Norwegian fish bit in.
Yeah, well, it's an ongoing bit, Smiley. So thank you for kicking it over to me here. This is what. So I'm of Norwegian heritage. So I broke this down with Vic when he was on, and we've had this long running tradition where every on Christmas Eve and the days leading up to Christmas Eve, my dad gets these boxes of dried salted cod that we have to soak for numerous days, and then you boil it. It's absolutely disgusting. You like cover it in butter, you put it on a flatbread, you try anything you can to disguise the taste. So I told Vic about this when he was on. I was like, has someone been just pulling an elaborate prank on me for all these years? Like, this is not an actual Norwegian tradition. He said, not exactly, but we have one that's more disgusting that sounds like what you're talking about, which is, I guess, rackfisk or something, where it's fermented salmon with like sour cream and onion on a lefse. Is that similar to the Swedish thing you're describing?
I think so. Let me Google real quick. I'm not sure what it's in English, but yes, there is. I mean, It's absolutely disgusting. I don't like it.
I produce Annika Sorenstam's show, and she said there's some like there's like a pickled herring thing that is Swedish. Yeah. Is that that's the one?
Yeah, and they put all these different spices and you know, it's absolutely disgusting. I don't like it, but a lot it has to be on the table. Everyone else, it's a civil war. It's not on the table.
All right, this is great. So I'll eat my cod. And Vic can have his fermented salmon, and you have your herring, and you know,
and we have our
watch herring, our Donald Duck cartoons. Merry Christmas to everybody in Scandinavia.
So if you ever speak to another Swede, they're gonna say that as well, 100%.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I was, you know, it's 8:08 a.m. here in Birmingham, and I was about to go eat breakfast, but now all I can think about is this sour cream
pickled
on a fish, a fermented salmon. So I think I'm just gonna keep drinking my coffee. But
I'm sorry about that.
Well, Ludwig, that was a fantastic conversation. I feel many people are going to know you much better now, as far as just your upbringing in Sweden and just why you are who you are, which is one of the best players in the world. And I think something that we're going to continue to see have great success. And I could tell you, I've been very impressed with your game. You're a fantastic player, but an even better dude, it seems like. So I look forward to getting to know you better. As we move into 2024 and watching you play some more high level golf, but enjoy Donald Duck, and hopefully we'll have you on soon, because this was too fun not to do again.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you having me on, Smile. It's been cool to kind of get to know you a little bit more over these last couple of months. And I think you're doing a tremendous job, and you know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool, and you keep bringing in pretty good guests. So I'm just very fortunate to be a part of it.
Thank you, man. We'll make sure to have you on again. Hopefully after we win one of these big events in 2024.
That'd be nice. Thank you.
Safe travels to Sweden.
Appreciate it.
We'll catch you on next time. See you, buddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That's all for today's show. This year in golf has truly been a whirlwind, and it's hard to believe we're already at the end of 2023. We've got one more episode for you dropping next week, and then we're going to take some time off, at least until the next bombshell golf news story drops. Thanks for listening and watching, and we'll see you then. The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.